You are about to listen to an episode of The Cypher before it was The Cypher. For our first 75 episodes, we were known as Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, and we had a slightly different format. In all honesty, our production value and sound quality today is much improved from these early episodes. That said, the content is so great that these shows are a valuable part of our archive. If you want more information about our transition, make sure to check out episode 76 with Ritz, which was our first one under the new name. To keep up to date on everything involving The Cypher, visit us online at thecyphershow.com or find us on iTunes. And now, without further ado, here's The Cypher before The Cypher. Welcome to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius, a weekly series that brings you exclusive in-depth conversations with some of the most interesting and exciting artists in hip-hop. We're brought to you by RapGenius.com, your source on the internet for decoding, annotating, and analyzing rap lyrics. I'm your host, Same Old Sean. This week, we talk to Soulcon. Khan started his career as one of the most successful battle rappers in the world, winning contest after contest in any number of battle leagues. In late 2010, he retired from battling to concentrate on making music, and has since released one full-length album, Soul Like Khan, and a number of EPs, all of which feature his clever, intricate political rhymes. His latest release is the free EP Wellstone, available at djbooth.net. I talked to Soulcon in a park near our Rap Genius office in Brooklyn. We began by discussing the politician Paul Wellstone, after whom Soul named his latest release. Here with Soulcon.
Yeah.
Who just released a new EP, right? Wellstone?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. It's available at djbooth.net exclusively.
Excellent. So why the title? Not that many people know who Paul Wellstone was.
I chose that title for the EP because Paul Wellstone, the late senator from Minnesota who died in a plane crash in 2002 during his re-election campaign, was, I think, one of the most genuine good people in politics, and always is my source of hope that things can get better, both in terms of the climate of politics and society, and also the people that take the lead. So for this EP, which is just an effort at making music that represents my values a little more overtly, I figured that he would be a good person to pay tribute to in the name.
Excellent. And the last time we met, you said that you met him years ago.
No, I heard him speak. I wished I met him. I mean, it was this huge panel. It was Junior Statesman of America that I used to be in. It was a debating and political education and discussion organization that you could be in high school, and at a program at Georgetown University, we were all taken to D.C. to one summer hear, speakers of all types, everyone from Robert Novak to Tom Downey to, it's a bunch of political figures of different types, Barney Frank, all sorts of folks, and we heard Paul Wellstone speak. This was in 2000, actually. Yeah, 2000. So this was, before 9/11. This is before a lot of terrible developments in our political and social climate today. So I think a lot of assumptions were different, but I think the one thing that remains the same is we need people like him.
Excellent. Keeping going on the political tip there, on the new record, you have this lyric. It's maybe my favorite lyric on the record, mm-hmm. because I think it's something that's very true and that most people, especially artists, tend to ignore, which is you say, is Khan making a political statement? Every statement is political, face it. And I was wondering if you can kind of go on about that for a second.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't believe that there is any truly apolitical or just frivolous thing said. It always reflects a value, either seriously, implicitly, ironically, or unconsciously. There's always some value. There's always some social or political value contained in whatever we do. And people can try to run away from that or hide from it, but it's the truth. you know, politics wouldn't be so resonant in you know, with people of all walks of life if it didn't have to do with how we live. And, you know, people can say, like, oh, it's a joke. It's like your willingness to make a joke of some kind reflects a social value. Your willingness to not do something reflects a social value or political value. So I just find it funny that people always try to be like, oh, there's nothing, you know, I'm not into politics. It's like, well, politics is into you, and it's going to run your life. So just, like, stop pretending and stop being a child, you know?
Yeah.
You can have a fun, you know, inconsequential life, but at least... Be frank about it.
Yeah. Speaking of jokes, I was looking. You know, we talked about this a little bit last
time.
There's
some hilarious old people in the mics right now.
I don't know if you're getting this.
Hilarious old people. They're the best. I like how they like went to scope out and investigate. Like, what's going on? What are these cameras?
Is it something
like,
I need to pay
like,
attention to? What's happening?
I would wager that us sitting here having this interview is a lot less abnormal to most people today than Kenny Rogers and his wife who just rode by on bikes. Anyway, continue.
Oh, so we touched on this a little bit last time, and I thought it was really important, and I wanted to get into it early. And also, I noticed you were tweeting about this a little bit on your Twitter account. You tweeted some stuff about battle rap and kind of your feelings about it. You'd written, I never really disliked any rapper or person I mocked, and certainly not any demographic that was the object of mockery. And then you said something else really interesting. You mentioned that you said battle rap invites bigotry. And I'm collapsing your
it does.
Phrase a bit.
It definitely does. I think I was talking to from Don't Flop about that actually on Twitter. It's funny to say talk about it on Twitter because it's such a bizarre medium. But who runs the battle league, Don't Flop. He's a great battler himself and is a dope artist, dope MC, and. He's saying that he's noticed a lot of sort of racist and bigoted people coming onto the battle scene, fan-wise, you know, and maybe even battle-wise. I don't know if he was alluding to that, but it's a medium in which the competitors say, "Hey, everything goes. It doesn't matter. It's just a battle." But you really can't control that. I don't know. I feel there's a. I don't know if it's deliberate or unintentional. Naivete about it. You can make offensive comments only so long before people who believe it are echoing them. And I know, again, it goes back to what I said about everything is political, everything is socially relevant. There is something to be said that, like, yeah, you can have comedy that is provocative, but there is a consequence. It does change the threshold of tolerance for what we can abide in the discourse. To some degree, it does. And it's a matter of, like, whether you want to be responsible enough to then actively engage people to squash any sentiments of genuine bigotry. You know, it's that's the thing. It's not like in battle rap people are ever, like, quick to say, oh, I made a homophobic remark. But don't worry. It was just in the context of a battle. I don't think that there's any problem with homosexuality. No one ever does that. Maybe they should, but I don't know if it'd be taken as seriously. But, you know, it's... And then there's this whole attitude, like, come on, don't take it seriously. It's just a battle. That's a very new thing. That's a very new thing, this idea that it's all just a joke or it's just ironic. I mean, granted, I'm not saying that we invented... That our generation invented
irreverence. No, but I feel like there's been a rise of it, right? Yeah. You have the whole sort of South Park attitude.
And also sort of the sort of... how do I put this? Like, the internet meme generation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something about just being able to post defensive pictures or provocative sentiments and just kind of distance yourself from it, being like, it's the internet, and then life becomes the internet. You know, it's like it's everyone wants to make an excuse for something just to save time,
right?
Not have to explain themselves. Not everybody in the world, obviously, there are plenty of accountable people, but I feel like it's all too often. That's not new, but this is how it's manifesting itself now. I think that's sort of like, it's easy to just be like, I made this song, but it's just, you know, it's just entertainment. Oh, you know, I'm do this, but I'm not a role model. It's like, too bad you are. Too bad it is. Everyone mimics everything. Everyone emulates everything. Everyone learns from something else. And you either can own up to that and disagree with the outcomes and say, well, I don't want this, or you just be hands off and dishonest.
Yeah. So, continuing in that vein for a second, on Not Like That,
Yeah. Right?
That song is specifically about misogyny in hip-hop. Right,
and mentioned in life,
some,
and in life,
but it mentioned specifically some rap tropes, the "we don't love them hoes" sort of rap trope and stuff like that. I guess the dual thing first: why write about that? Why write about it? Because it's not like people are going to complain if you're not writing about it. You know what I mean?
I did it because I think the form a lot of those sentiments take are not very strongly articulated, and I think sometimes if you make a song that espouses sentiments that has that pertain to gender equality or respect for women, that unfortunately they take forms that, while they're not, they're perfectly valid forms of and tones to take in music, they're not forceful enough, and it's a strong message. It should be. That's why I did it over that beat. You know, you listen to the beat for "Not Like That" and you think, oh, this is about to be like a Wu-Tang track or something. Like, it doesn't sound like the type of beat that you, like, talk about, that you're led to believe in hip-hop today, that you would speak about issues relating to men's relationship with women. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, yeah, no one's going to penalize you for not talking about that, but at the same time, no one's privileging it enough in the first place. You know, people... That's the thing. I feel like subject matter is always secondary to some degree, like the novelty of your subject matter, because there's only so much you could talk about without just being kind of like self-indulgent and talking about stuff no one really cares about. It's less about that than how you speak about it.
Okay. Yeah. So you mentioned beats, and I wanted to talk about the Congregation tune, right? Use the funky drummer.
Yeah.
Was that a callback to anything, to the Golden Age, to James Brown? Was it just something the producer did, like...
I think, you know, it's funny. That's a DJ Element beat that he produced all of Wellstone.
Yeah.
I have no problem announcing the samples for this because it's free.
Yeah, also, I didn't funky think that,
it's okay.
That was...
And everyone can tell it's funky drummer, but, like, we're not going to get any trouble for that. But I think that was just... It just happened to be what he liked in terms of what fit the melodic samples of it. There are two other samples in there that people could figure out for themselves. But... what I found really funny about that is that they were using that for like the BET cipher, which I think is hilarious, because I would just atomize what everyone does in those BET ciphers. It'd be ridiculous. It'd be I would blow up people's TVs from via satellite or whatever they're doing. I imagine they probably have it pre-recorded, but anyway.
Yeah, cool. And so, who do you think out there working today is kind of like making music of, like, that you feel is on the level of what you do or what you want to accomplish?
You know what I mean? I think, like, as far as my peers, peers, and if you've exceeded me in many ways, but because, you know, I've only really been earnestly at music as a solo endeavor for like the last year and a half. But people who I believe, peers of mine who I actually admire a lot, and I hope that anything I do doesn't just seem anything less than admiring emulation, is Homeboy Sandman and Scene, two artists that I look to as peers and colleagues and friends.
You work with Scene on the new record.
Yeah, and Sandman was on my first album, Soul Icon, and Scene was too. And I'm actually on Scene's new album, which everyone should get, Brooklyn Night. It's going to be crazy. I think Scene, of our generation... I think, as far as rappers go, Scene and Homeboy Sandman are pretty much like, they should be your barometers for what's good. And people could raise other ones to me, I don't care. I don't think anyone compares.
Okay. Getting back to the new EP for a second, on American Made, right? You're maybe the only rapper I can think of to diss the Electoral College.
Yeah.
What did it do to you, and when's the response track?
It's stupid. I hope it never responds. I don't believe in it. I don't think it seeks to, you know, Electoral College seeks to emphasize influence by smaller states.
Sure.
You know, but at the end of the day, with the new media, you know, as far as new media goes, that changes the landscape in which candidates have to appeal to everyone. And in a way, you could say that makes every vote count more if it's a popular vote. They really have to chase all of them down. And they can't just take this... trust me, they're not just going to go to California and New York.
Right.
especially, and that's the thing, then they generally, whatever political affiliation you're of, then people really have to devote their time equally across the political spectrum, and it's not a matter of like, well, I have to go to Ohio and Florida, and then I'll see you guys later. You know, it's like, and that sort of status quo as it is doesn't help, and, you know, more often than not, the popular vote, in fact, I can only think of one instance where the popular vote didn't align with the electoral college vote. Are there two or is it one? Either way, sorry if I'm not a, you know, I'm not just such a hardcore numbers junkie, but I feel like, especially in, you look at the Gore Bush outcome, I think it would have been worth it. It's funny because it's like this romance and mythology about real America, small town America. Small town America sold itself a long time ago, and every brick and inch of ground has been sold out to larger corporate interests and larger development interests. So, you know, that's a small percentage, and you could always say, like, well, this is real America, this is small town America. You're really kind of shitting on a lot of the rest of America, which numerically is actually vastly, vastly different from that.
Yeah. Scene has a line on that about your record about the minority sort of becoming the majority.
Yeah, and you know what? It's been that. And if you're going to talk about, like, say, suburban versus rural or urban versus rural, rural America is real. It's all real America. That's the point. It's all real. And I feel like if you switched over to, you know, the popular vote, the presidential elections, you'd have less of this, like, nonsensical mythology being perpetrated about, you know, like, well, I'm appealing to real America. The coasts aren't real America. It's like, then why does most of the country not live in real America?
Yeah.
Why do they all leave? Why is no one there? Why was there no one there in the first place? You're talking about places that aren't even the original. It's funny that New York, one of the original parts of America, is routinely dismissed as not real America.
Like, in fact, it's been around since the 17th century or whatever.
Or like California, L.A., not real America. When L.A. literally created the American imagination about itself through Hollywood. Like, just, like, get over it. You know? Like, things like that bother me so much to no end. I mean, I grew up in L.A. I live in New York now. So, you know, I feel like the cities get a bad rap from people who can't cope with not being in them.
Yeah. In fact, in one of your tunes, you talk about Cali a little bit. You mentioned that, like, you had to leave home to really see it for... You say what it wasn't, I think.
Yeah.
If I'm...
Yeah, I mean, what Los Angeles and the Valley, where I'm from, you know, Fast Times at Ridgemont High Country, like, what I had to realize about it was that it... I don't know, it wasn't at the time, the hip-hop scene was way different when I was growing up, you know, and it could have had a place for me, but I think ultimately, in retrospect, it wasn't where I belonged musically, so, and I think that's, sorry for my phone going off, and I think that's a fair thing to say, you know, there are people who have moved to different places, not because they disdain the scene, they could love it, or they fit, you know, like, I look at DJ Premier from Texas, moves to New York, you know, and that's a respectable
Guru's
move.
From Boston.
Guru's from Boston, and they still have love for their home.
Yeah,
you know, and you know, RIP Guru, you know, and he still had love for Boston. So, you know, I think this wasn't my place.
We'll be right back with the rest of our talk with Sol Khan. You're listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. To see Sol Khan's verified artist Rap Genius profile, including further explanations of his own songs, you can visit rapgenius.com/soulcon. Welcome back to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. We began the second half of our conversation with Sol Khan by talking about something we all love and fear in equal measure, rappers who try to sing.
Okay. On the new record, and I heard you talking about this the last time we met briefly. You mentioned, you know, you have this line about, I sing a little too, but I ain't no Maxwell.
Yes.
And I just wanted to get into the whole thing of, like, singing hooks, how that's different than rapping. You feel more or less comfortable doing it. Is it something you'd done prior to, like, singing on your own tunes?
I sang, you know, I think that singing when you can is useful. When you can't, don't do it. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm not the best at it, but I do it when I feel like my voice lends itself to the song. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a bit more of a, you know, I got my big guns you know, vocally.
Sure.
You know, Hockey I got Aki Bermese, yeah. you know, and other singers I've yet to unveil, but I feel like sometimes I don't want to go to that length or it doesn't fit the sound. It's all about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I could have asked Aki to sing every single chorus
yeah.
I've ever done.
And people do that, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, some people do that, you know. Some people, that works for them. And it could have worked for me, but at the same time, I just felt at the moment like this is what I want to do, and I go with my gut, and then I question it heavily with my brain, very ferociously, almost to the point of self-loathing. So.
Right. Cool. I want to talk about Congregation for a second, yeah. the hook of it, mm-hmm. right? Because the hook, you mentioned this, you know, prayers used by Jews and prayers used by Muslims that... You know, very consciously you chose ones that have similar phonetics,
yeah.
right? And probably, although I don't know for sure, similar linguistic roots.
Yeah.
Why did you choose that, and how did it? Why, you know, how did you feel about being a rapper who is Jewish reaching out to Muslims specifically, and especially in this political climate?
I'm actually, it's more responsive because I have a lot of fans. Either from battles or music, who are Muslim, and I get the sentiment. It's tough because I never wanted to be like I make music for everybody.
Yeah.
I'm a Jewish person who makes music for everybody. I don't make music for Jews exclusively or intentionally or whatever. I can't be pandering like that because it's not fair to the audience.
Yeah.
Even the intended audience of said pandering. It's that they're not getting honest, real music.
Yeah.
If I'm doing that, so I really make music for everybody, and I have a substantial Muslim fan base, very very different, you know, walks of life and different schools of thought in that faith, and I feel like it's you know, you have the opportunity when you have that, and it's people follow what. Is similar to them. I have a lot of Jewish fans too, and I felt, why not speak to both in one voice? Because I don't know, I feel like our generation doesn't have to hold on to a lot of the old tropes and mm-hmm. and misconceptions about each other that our predecessors did, and not even all our predecessors do, you know, like there should be no reason. I have some somewhat bold views about, you know, Judaism and my relationship to, say, Israel, which is usually the sticking point.
Sure.
Israel is usually where it all splits in half.
We can talk about that off camera.
Yeah, but we don't have to have the same schools of thought on that anymore.
Yeah.
Because
which is actually something that's starting to happen
yeah.
very slowly amongst yeah. like a younger generation.
And it should.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's funny because I think the state of Israel should exist. It's there are people living there. It is a history now my family was Jewish before the modern state of Israel and would be Jewish without it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say it's expendable, but my notion of Jewishness is not wedded to any territory or place. It
right.
transcends that entirely. It should transcend that. It's a notion if you do believe in a higher power, in my opinion, it's something that makes claims about the entire nature of the universe, and it's bigger than a plot of ground.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily want to, you know.
It's all good. It's all good.
It's
yeah.
like, you know, obviously a big sticking point amongst Islam, you know, and Judaism has been the Israel-Palestine issue.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if that hook was at least obliquely.
Again, those are issues to be settled in the realms of geopolitics
right.
and organizing among peoples who are involved in it, not so much rap music.
Right.
Not that it can't have a voice in it, but I mean, the ultimate resolution won't come from that.
Okay.
But I mean, that issues like that and a long history of conflict have led to, I think, a social stigmas in each group against the other. I'll get messages like, hey, you're the only Jew that I like. And I'm like, well, shucks. Okay. I mean, that's cool. That's cool. You know, I get that. I mean, I feel that. Like, I that's the thing, though. I don't respond with, like, well, but all the Jews are awesome. What are you talking about? Like, that'd be so counterproductive. And,
right.
like, it's not the point. The point then you make is, well, why is it that someone says that I'm the only Jew that they like?
Right.
Why?
Right, and that's a very
you don't respond to that.
Question.
Yeah, like when a whole when a large swath of people just don't like another large swath of people, the solution isn't just keep disliking each other and keep acting like you're right. That's not how you solve that.
Yeah. Changing tacks for a second.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about your attachment to the word soul. What it means to you? Why you chose to put it in your name?
Yeah.
How it relates to your work, to your rap persona?
Yeah. It used to just function as a homonym for S-O-L-E, for soul. My name used to be Soul Consensus, and I shortened it to SoulCon at the advice of my friends who were smarter than I was at the time. But SoulCon is the name, and soul just now it's just the name. Mm-hmm. Doesn't even have those roots. I think that works for a lot of people, though.
Okay.
I think it's how it works for a lot of people, because I think I was having a discussion with the rest of Brown Bag a couple years ago that a lot of rap names just aren't good. Not that they're bad, even. Well, some of them are bad, but the rappers are incredible. You know, just on their face and by themselves.
No.
I ain't gonna call any names, but like, just think, if you sit around and think by yourself, like, there are a lot of rap
names. What does it rhyme with? What does it rhyme with?
Everything. I mean, most rap names are bad, and that, like, just by themselves. And it's not, and like, if you just were to say it, you'd be like, I'm not gonna call myself that. Like, I'm not, you know, like, and that's, it's just a matter of the person, you know, that makes it, yeah. Basically.
Okay, cool. And I noticed on the new EP also there was that David Cross line.
Yeah.
That I thought was really funny. Yeah. And I know, obviously, we talked previously, you mentioned, you know, Beverly Hills 90210 and one of your earlier songs. What kind of TV do you like? What, you know, like,
I don't even have cable anymore. I just watch on Hulu and Netflix now, and iTunes for things I purchase. It's just like, I got tired of, I hate to say it, but commercials just kill me. Like, they're just so bad, like, appalling, and like, so insulting and condescending. Like, and it just sucks when, like, Skittles has the illest commercial. And it's like, I mean, it's dope, they're dope commercials, but like, why can't everyone do something that's provocative or interesting visually? Like, if you're going to try to shill some product, at least do it with a bit of a flair to it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know, hey, ladies, you need to vacuum something? Like, come on. Like, it's 2012.
Right.
You know, you pay a lot of money for these ads. Might as well get something out of it. Like, just entertain people at every turn. That's the principle, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just couldn't deal with it. And it's like paying so much money for a bunch of stuff I don't even watch.
Right.
You know, not that I'm against cable, if you want cable. I don't have time for it. So, you know, if I buy Mad Men on iTunes and watch, you know, Colbert Report on the Colbert Report website, you know, there's no point of me having cable, honestly.
Right. Okay, cool. There was one line on The Voice that I thought was really, really good. And speaking of provocative, kind of provocative to a certain subset of hip-hop fans.
Yeah.
You say you prefer To Kill a Mockingbird to Machiavelli. And first of all, to say that anything at all ever is better than Tupac is like heresy to a certain group of really hardcore Tupac fans. Why compare those two? What were you trying to say?
You know what's funny? I knew people were going to ask that and say it. It's not about Machiavelli. I just said it that way for rhythmic concision. It's not about Machiavelli, the Tupac joints. It's about Machiavelli.
About the writer.
Niccolo Machiavelli, the prince.
Okay.
It's because people cite, who are always like, well, I am a cunning man who has a Machiavellian approach to life, and I very pragmatic, you know, contrary to, you know, popular values of virtue and honesty.
I do what's necessary.
Yeah.
I'm a realist.
Whereas I prefer the book, you know, they're not really similar things. I'm gonna be like, what would you rather do? Listen to Tupac or read To Kill a Mockingbird? It's kind of a weird comparison. I think we could do both, maybe at the same time. Yeah, so it's really just about I prefer things.
Machiavelli.
I prefer you know, the sort of that, you know, I prefer to be upstanding than perceived. A lot of people are like, it's better to be feared than loved. And like, you're a cornball. Like, get over yourself. It's the corniest thing. People say that, and like, no, it's not. It's not better to be feared than loved, because then when someone's more scary than you, no one stands up for you, douchebag. Like, you know, it's not even pragmatic in the first place. People are loved. If you're loved by people, they will die for you.
Right.
You want to really you really want to get down to it like that, but like, and also just begets nothing but shittiness in the world if you're just trying to be a figure of fear and imposition. Or, like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of things that, like dudes are like, that's being of literature, a lot of people are like, I always hear dudes be like, yo, it's like say in the art of war or something. I'm like, what are you talking about? You work at like an insurance agency. Like, what are you talking about? Get over yourself. That's like men, unfortunately, especially act like real idiots on a real consistent basis. And I have sympathy for them because someone else taught them how to be an idiot before them. And like, there's just, like, men just don't know, especially now in this day and age, because, you know, we're in such, like, a clean, safe, manufactured and processed era. It's hard to know how to be a man and how to redefine masculinity for this era, as it should have been redefined before, because it sucked then. Like, it was stupid and brutish and mean and cruel and sexist. And just not really strong. It was actually just exploitative before, you know?
Right.
So it's not like you'd be like, we need to return to a better time when men were men and good men. It's like, what good men? Things sucked before. I don't care. They really just sucked. There were amazing things that happened, mostly couched in a lot of things that just sucked.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's just speaking from a historical perspective of really not wanting to live in a time before this. I have no romance or nostalgia for pre-industrial revolution era anything, or pre-labor union anything, pre-FDA world, you know, like all that stuff, that romance. It's just because men don't know, like men and people don't know how to define themselves now.
Right.
So like, well, what were they like then? I like that. I could have fought my way through that time. It's like, yeah, and then someone would kill you. That's how it would go. Okay. If you're a Mr. Fighting guy.
Right.
Are you going to be like two more questions?
Yeah, you got it. You got it. Okay, so I guess mostly I want to ask, you have a new album in the works coming out?
Yes, I do. It's definitely in the works. We're working on the beat phase of it right now. Mm-hmm. And once all the beats are assembled and it's sort of like composed and structured, then the raps come. And that, you know, then there could be revisions and alterations to the structure of the beats a little bit here and there, and to the structure of the album. But, you know, first I want a picture of what I'm writing to for the whole album first.
Okay. Any general thematic ideas or concept ideas, or you don't want to talk about that before?
We'll see. We'll see what happens. You know, we'll see what the beats lead me to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And lastly, about the Wellstone record.
Yes.
How does your writing and your delivery and the content on that, how do you think it compares to the Coltrane-themed EPs that we talked about last time?
Oh, well, I think Wellstone thematically and, you know, what we address, like, it's certainly more coherent than the other ones, because the other ones had, like, a theme around which it gravitated.
Right.
You know, like, self-worth or things worth fighting for or, you know, just being, you know, just, I don't know, I guess like despondency, I think, was more resolution. It was funny that
it was called
resolution, but it was like kind of like what I need. He's trying to like get that EP was about getting to the, you know, the pit of your stomach and like really finding what's left and what keeps you going. But Wellstone is really just about what I want for the world and for myself. That's what it's about. And a lot of people aren't willing to address those things because they think that people, either A, they're afraid of people disagreeing with them, B, they haven't thought about it yet, and or C, you know, they're afraid they'll come off as preachy. And don't, you know, just get your guts up and do it.
Right.
You know, make some music you believe in. Yeah. And you can advocate things through music. People were doing it before any of us ever picked up a mic.
Okay, can we just get your thoughts on Rap Genius as a
sub? Yeah, Rap Genius is one of the bold new frontiers of interactivity between music and the listener, and now even music and the music maker, because rappers like me can have verified accounts, and we can all submit our interpretations and of lyrics and the lyrics themselves to different songs in a wiki format. I'll say wiki because it is now common web property. And I go there to satisfy my curiosity and to provide people with more texture and nuance to the songs that I've been a part of.
You've been listening to Outside the Lines with Rap Genius. If you're curious about any of the songs mentioned on this show, audio, lyrics, and explanations, many by Sol Khan himself, can be found on rapgenius.com. Rap Genius is dedicated to decoding, annotating, and analyzing hip-hop lyrics. Join us next week when we talk to the legendary Cool Keith about shopping, the brain, and why he loves the color green. Outside the Lines with Rap Genius is hosted and written by Sean Sitaro, a.k.a. Same Old Sean. This interview was recorded by Dan Berger. The podcast was engineered by Brian Penny at the beautiful 3X Studios in Brooklyn, New York. Intro music by Psionic and interlude music by Sir Loin. Special thanks to Nicole Witty Solomon. I'm your host, Same Old Sean, and I'll see you next week on Outside the Lines with Rap Genius.